The C Word is an Odyssey podcast.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Stupid.
Detestable.
Nymphomaniac.
Adulterous.
Infant murderous.
Orgiastic lesbian.
Filthy cunt.
Traitor to the state.
Morally bankrupt sex fiend.
Austrian whore.
Madam Deficit. This week, we're talking about, say it, Alyssa.
Marie Antoinette.
Yes, girl.
You want to know if I'll survive?
Welcome back to The C Word, a Luminary podcast production. This is a show where we discuss women who society has deemed mad, sad, or just plain bad, and we attempt to untangle who they really were beyond their wild reputations.
We are going to talk about women who've been called crazy by sifting through the cultural trash heap of history one nasty rumor at a time.
I'm orgiastic lesbian Lena Dunham.
And I'm Alyssa Bennett, historian of the bad behaviors.
And we will never call you crazy. Before we get started, we do not claim to know all the facts, people. We're just passionate students of these very interesting women in history, and we're trying to focus a lens, a female gaze, if you will, on how and why these women achieved notoriety.
This is a discussion about what various people have said about these women over the years. We're not saying that every statement or account we'll be discussing is necessarily true. So if you hear something that piques your interest or inflames your rage, we encourage you to do your own investigación.
Our hearts are in the right place. They really are, even if we sound a little sassy. And together we can try and get to the bottom of what has been said about these women over time. Now, on to Marie. Alyssa, what are five things we need to know?
Number one. So Marie Antoinette was the last queen of France before the French Revolution. She was one of the original party girls of Let Them Eat Cake fame, although everyone knows she never said that. So for her lifetime and many lifetimes thereafter, she was a symbol of royal excess and toxic frivolity. But it's an interesting case because now we have kind of reclaimed her as a wronged, sad girl, which is something that we're going to discuss. I think it's an interesting turn in the story, and I think our listeners will think so too. Number two. The thing is that she was hated before France's revolution. She was brought from Austria at the age of 13 to marry heir to the throne Louis Auguste, who we will call eccentric. France was like, ew, those Austrians are tacky, and they resented her for not bearing an heir immediately because you're supposed to get pregnant like your first night in bed with your new husband.
Yeah.
Number three, married life, as it does for many, sucked for Marie Antoinette. People hated her. And Marie decided that she was going to use the resources that were at her disposal. She threw parties, perfected the poof hairstyle, and erected make-believe villages where she could LARP with actors hired to role-play civilian life. Number four. Amidst all this, France was in the shit. The rich weren't being taxed, and people were going hungry. Royal people didn't get this, and they didn't let it get in the way of their spending habits, which stoked the flames of the revolution. So the royalty was despised, and since everyone already disliked Marie from the start, she became public enemy number one. Relatable. Number five, her palace is stormed by an angry mob. She's caught trying to flee France. She tries to save the monarchy and is then tried for treason. Marie Antoinette was executed by guillotine, which is also called the National Razor, on October 16th, 1793. She was 37 years old. Your age.
My God, I'm only 34, but I feel 37, and I feel like I've already been executed by guillotine. So let's find out the real story here.
Okay, so Archduchess Maria Antonia Josepha Johanna d'Autriche Lorraine. That's one of those long names.
It's really nice, though.
It's very pretty. I like that word, d'Autriche.
What if I named my child d'Autriche Dunham?
I quite like it, although I think we'll get to the problems with it. Okay, we're going to get to it.
Yeah.
She was born in Vienna on November 2nd, 1755. It's a very long name. We will call her, as she was called in the family home from here, Maria Antonia. So Maria Antonia was the 15th of 16 children born to Empress Maria Theresa, who was the ruler of the Habsburg Empire, and Francis I, who was the ruler of the Holy Roman Empire.
Imagine if you were ruling an empire and you were like, I'm also just going to, don't worry about it, push out 16 children from my pussy.
Well, they did it on purpose. So, you know, they had as many children as they could possibly have because the children were kind of a mechanism to form new political alliances and kind of spread out the power. So from birth, these children's purpose, especially the girls, was basically to help Austria by marrying into another dynasty or another royal family so that the Habsburgs could increase their power and increase their reach.
Which is so stressful, because then imagine if you were one of those girls and you're born and you're not charming and you're not beautiful and you're not all these things. So good job that she was born cute as shit.
Yes, she was cute. So I believe that we need some context, so I'm going to bring in the most capable expert that I know, my child, Ollie.
Hello, my name is Oliver, and I'm Alyssa Bennett's son, and I haven't done anything yet, so you probably haven't ever heard of me.
So Ollie is going to tell us a little bit about the relationship between Austria and France at this time.
Well, the French are allied with the Austrians and the British are allied with the Prussians. And then that eventually led to... And so they don't really like each other. The Habsburgs were never getting along with the French all that well. Because, well, they're right next to each other. And eventually Austria was annexed into Germany in the beginning of World War II. And during World War I, France and Germany had been fighting over the Alsace-Lorraine. So it just, I mean, I don't know. I haven't really studied this in depth. But as far as I know, they never really got along. And now the French and the Austrians still had a sore spot between them. So they just tried to strengthen it by sending Marie Antoinette to France to marry Louis XVI. She was really pompous, I would say. Crazy poof accessories. She had a ship stuck in her hair as just a style, so I kind of get why the French populace were really mad at her. I'd probably get it more if I was starving and my family was starving and my ancestors were starving centuries back. I'd probably get it.
Ollie, what would you do if your mom tried to sell you to your neighbors because they had been having a long-standing argument?
I would not be happy. I'd throw a fit. I'd throw another fit. I'd get divorced. Throw a fit.
Honestly, Alyssa, what I think is cool about Ollie doing this is that people are going to think you're a good mom because he knows so much.
It's a grand illusion.
I know more about the Civil War. I wear a Union kepi to school.
Yes, queen.
I have two friends, Tebow and Gabriel. They're also really into history. I usually cover Civil War to World War I, Tebow covers American Revolution to Civil War and the World Wars. And Gabriel, we call him Gaby, it's force of habit. He goes World War II onwards into like modern history.
Thanks, Ollie. You can stop by any time.
We should switch places because we got to finish.
But I want to read the chat. Yeah. That's what I always do.
Love you very much.
See you soon. I bet my kid is like straining his ear at the door because I wouldn't let him read this and he's desperate to know what the C word is.
Like
the like real one. The real one.
Like the actual C word?
Yeah, he's like, tell me what the worst swear word is in history. I told him I'd tell him when he's 13.
That's a great age to find out. Anyway, can we get back to Marie Antoinette?
So the thing is that she was born so low down in the totem that I think it wasn't really expected that she was going to score like a major husband. She was probably, they thought she was going to score a husband that was like from a lesser European country.
But, yeah, she was going to get like the one from Luxembourg or whatever.
Right. So as a child, she was charming and amusing. She liked to dress up her dolls. She danced. She played the harpsichord. And she was sweet. That's important, right? To be sweet.
Yeah. And there are rumors that when they were both seven, Mozart wanted to marry her after he slipped on the floor of their palace and she gave him a kiss and asked if he was okay. And we can laugh at how cute this is, but guess what? She was engaged for real 3 years later. 3 years later, after her little kiss on the head of Mozart.
So the shit was that she was not a genius because she was so low down in the birth totem pole. So no one was like, oh, we have to make sure that this young lady understands international affairs and knows how to like read the Bible or whatever they were reading. So it is speculated by some that she was nearly illiterate. Her mother had too many kids. She was too busy orchestrating state affairs and politically scheming to deal with her. So she sort of neglected her and never pushed her to achieve anything spectacular. And she thought she would just kind of marry whoever was around, like I have done in my life. And like, who's around now?
Who's around now?
Who's around next?
And that's what I'm saying, baby. Who's around next? Who wants to look at my Fenty lingerie? But then two of the sisters died and one was too scarred by smallpox to marry well. Also relatable. So Maria Antonia was pushed up the ladder. And by the time she was around 11 years old, she had been unofficially pledged to marry the 12-year-old Dauphin of France, Louis Auguste, a.k.a. Louis the... Wait, I can't read Roman numerals. I forget.
That's the 16th, I believe.
Louis the 16th. I always get confused because it's like you're minusing from the one before, and it's so confusing.
You know who it occurred to me that he resembled today?
Who?
And this is going to sound mean.
I'll just always see him as Jason Schwartzman. I'll just always see him as Jason Schwartzman.
I think he kind of resembles Glenn Close.
Oh, well, Glenn Close loves to do a gender swap. Remember when she played that, like, male butler?
She should have been in that Sofia Coppola movie instead of Jason Schwartzman.
That would have been amazing if there was, like, a sex scene between Glenn Close and Kirsten Dunst. Well, the union was particularly important to the Habsburgs because it brought them closer to Glenn Close. No, it's because Austria and France had been bitter enemies since the damn Middle Ages. So her mother was focused on forging a union with them, and everyone got straight to work on a makeover.
So in order to prepare for this new mariage, this new allegiance.
You're really good at French.
I'm not. Marie Antoinette had to have a makeover. This is so exciting. I feel a little sad that there's not a movie just about this makeover. You know, like,
there's a good sequence in Sofia Coppola's movie of the makeover.
But they're not. It's, you know what I like? In a cartoon, they can really do a makeover nice because, like, there's no rules of
So it's like everything's like flying around and like you're just like walking through like a magical shower and you come out with like funny makeup.
Right.
It's so fun.
Like Papa Smurf comes out and he looks hot. He looks really hot.
So fun.
So the makeover is an exciting moment for me. like we said, it was really generally accepted that the French thought that Austrians were tacky and the Habsburgs wanted to smooth out any of this child's rough edges that might subject both her and the country to national criticism and humiliation. So in 1768, Maria Antonia was 13 years old and they were like, guess what, bitch, it's time for your makeover. So the first problem with her was that her naturally strawberry blonde hair had a slightly receding hairline that highlighted her unacceptable Habsburg forehead. And I would encourage everyone to go on the internet and just Google Habsburg forehead, because you will come up with a wellspring of portraits that are said to highlight the physical traits of this family that were thought to be the result of centuries of inbreeding. So there are these certain features that show up in the Habsburgs that they're like trying to kind of bend back into acceptable shape. So she gets this new hairstyle by a hairdresser named Monsieur Larseneur. And he hid her problems with this hairstyle that was called La Dauphine.
Is that her famous hairstyle or was that an earlier hairstyle?
This is an earlier one. So if you look at, you know, basically the only way that these people could see what the other person looked like was through portraits. So they would
send back and forth
miniatures.
Portraits.
Right. But the Bourbon court sent someone over who was charged with the task of evaluating Maria Antonia's beauty. And this representative was like, this bitch has some crooked teeth and they gotta go. So they sent over a French dentist who employed this very arcane device called a Fouchard's bandeau. Don't look it up. It's gonna make you feel bad. And it was meant to...
I don't mind anything, but I just can't with tooth stuff.
No, this isn't nice. So it's like very primitive braces that were used to twist her teeth into shape. And it would have been incredibly painful, no anesthesia. Maybe they gave her like a shot of alcohol. I don't know. And she would have had to wear the device for 3 months. They're like, here's like a thimble of wine. Is that good enough?
Yeah.
Once her teeth were looking imperial, Louis XV, who is known on this podcast as history's sluttiest king, maybe you should go out with him.
Yeah.
He sent over a tutor, and the tutor observed that Maria Antonia was fun, that she was very good at this walk called the Versailles Glide.
Can I say one thing about these slutty kings really fast?
Yeah.
I love the way that they're always depicted because they always feel a little gay and they're always like giggling and grabbing girls' butts in this very like louche way and like wearing a wig and makeup. And they like are always like relaxing on a chair waiting for someone to come over to them so they can eat their pussy. Do you know what I mean?
I do. But all I can see is Glenn Close in a wig. A pair of knickers.
Yes. But it's like it's sexy to me. The idea of like this, like it's almost like sex with them would be like sex with like a fun friend, and like the next day you'd be like, yeah, it was like barely anything, like he just like fingered me in the bathtub.
Oh, I think it would be like sex with the Marquis de Sade personally.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh no, I was imagining something much more like puckish and Midsummer Night's Dream, and you're like, no, they'd like finger you with a torch
or like one of those rings that is a ring for your whole finger but it's covered in spikes.
Oh yeah, no, that's not for me.
So
back to Marie Antoinette. At the same time, this tutor found her nose to be kind of big, that she sucked at reading, and that she was lazy as fuck. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. Maria Antonia would have had it driven into her head from age 13, after being allowed to run ramshackle as a child in the Habsburg court, that her appearance and adherence to French royal codes of etiquette was the primary thing she needed to pay attention to. So from this moment on, her life becomes a performance in which she is striving to satisfy these basically impossible standards of behavior and comportment. And it's a standard that she will struggle to adhere to for the rest of her life. And ultimately, it shall be her downfall.
I love that word, comportment.
I know. And I wish it would be used more.
Comport yourself, Lena. Comport yourself.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter, from plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
So you know what? A makeover is not like a cartoon makeover. It's not a magic wand. In like 1770, they can't restructure your face using fillers or Botox or a thread lift. So eventually they had to be like, this is as good as it's going to get. On April 19, 1770, Maria Antonia had a proxy wedding in Vienna where her brother Ferdinand stood in for Louis Auguste. It was official. She was now Marie Antoinette, the Dauphine of France. So this
the
is kind of wild.
The idea of a proxy wedding where your brother stands in is so psychotic.
It's like, wild.
And and the $3 million in today's money French-made wardrobe her mother commissioned for her trousseau, another great word, were then loaded into one of 57 carriages to deliver her to France. She would never see her mother or Austria again. And her mother was like, I have 16 of those. I don't care. She was 14 years old.
She was 14 years old. This was like a thing where everyone would come out in their respective towns to see these carriages go by. It was like a caravan of wealth and ostentation. Imagine like a Christmas festival or a Christmas parade that traveled like across several countries and people would just come out when they knew it was going down their main street. And so one rumor I really like about this trip is from Goethe, the writer Goethe, who wrote that a proclamation was issued barring, quote, any disgusting or unfortunate people from showing themselves to Marie Antoinette because she dreaded the sight of ugly people.
Oh my God.
So 2 weeks later, Marie Antoinette was officially handed over to France.
So, in a symbolic ritual conducted in front of more than 300 courtiers that aimed to resituate her as property of France, trademark, she was stripped of her clothes. These people did not give a fuck that everything had been made in France, her jewelry, save a small gold watch from her mother, and even her dog mops. This is the saddest part, Marie Antoinette. I, like, literally cry when this happens. She eventually gets him back because someone important feels sorry for her. Well, the attendants argued amongst themselves who would get to keep what. She is then redressed in new French clothes, jewels, and shoes. And guess what? This bitch cried. This bitch cried.
This bitch cried. This bitch cried.
Who wouldn't cry if you took all their clothes off and got them naked in front of everyone and took their fucking dog away?
And you, like watch everyone fight over who gets to keep your stuff that your mom gave you.
It's would be
and
so
you're 13
horrible.
Years old.
I cried at camp because they, like, took away the candy that my mom stuffed inside a teddy bear because they were like, you can't keep this. There's going to be bears in the cabin. So right. I can't imagine.
This bitch cried. So this caravan finally arrives in France. And it's like the most famous episode of Married at First Sight ever. She meets her glamorous husband, Louis Auguste, who is a myopic, padlock-obsessed 15-year-old with low self-esteem who is too nervous to look at her, who resembles Glenn Close, and he is scared of sexual intercourse and has been raised to think that Austrians are disgusting. Lena, did you like the program Married at First Sight? Did you watch it?
Yeah, I love things like that. I love when on Married at First Sight, when they get into bed together the first night is like literally the cringiest pleasure
it's
when
like
they like climb.
It's so chilling. It's so
but
chilling.
I always, when I was a kid and would watch movies with arranged marriages, when they would like get into bed together the first night, I didn't know what the expectation was, but I kind of knew. And, like, she'd be, like, in a nightgown, and her husband would be, like, good night, m'lady, or whatever. I would always, like, find it very erotic. Like, there is something about that energy of, like, if your arranged marriage was hot, and you didn't know the person, and you got into bed, and it was, like, hello, hello, and there's, like, a weird expectation that you're gonna fuck, it would be extremely compelling.
These people are 13.
And he hates her and finds her disgusting. And she's just had all her clothes and her dog taken away from her.
Yeah.
So it's not hot.
It's not hot. So the other thing that happens when she arrives is that the ladies of the court thought that she was poorly dressed. They thought she was flat-chested. They thought she was
tacky. And poorly comported.
Poorly comported. And they kind of really delighted in talking shit about her behind these lacy fans that they used to partially hide their faces.
But not hide their faces enough because everyone knew they were talking shit.
Oh, yeah. They were like, we're talking shit about you. No, we're not talking shit about you. So Marie Antoinette was assigned a behavior coach who was...
We need one of those.
I know. I would love one. I would love one. Her behavior coach was like outraged at her ineptitude. She was like, you got to get your shit together. Like, they're serious. This is serious.
Louis XV was actually very charmed by her. And since it had been drilled into her skull that she needed to make this shit work, she was very happy to indulge him from the start. And this was nice for her because the court was very treacherous and everyone loved to tell vicious and potentially life-ruining little fibs. So it was good to have an ally, even if it was her slutty fucking father-in-law.
Yeah, but he's like the one who's in charge of the whole shit.
But it's creepy. It's basically like having to make friends with Harvey Weinstein. Like, it's not fun.
I don't know. I think he was like not that bad. Even though I said that
you
he probably...
You said it would be like fucking the Marquis de Sade. That's literally just what you said. You were like, he would fuck you with a spiky ring. You contradicted yourself.
But he wasn't that bad. So on May 16th, 1770, Marie and Louis Auguste arrived together at Versailles. Those bitches were married. They were like 13s old enough to get married.
What she wore sounded so nice. It was a silver brocade wedding gown covered in diamonds that was too small and didn't close at the back.
Yeah.
She dropped a large blob of ink onto her name when she signed the marriage contract, and everyone thought it was a bad omen.
So this was like, imagine this is like the most significant document
in French history or whatever.
This is like a really significant, important document. And it's just like she fucks it up and it's forever. You know, like she just, it's fucked up.
They don't
up
have
forever.
Like a second one. They're not, she's not like, can I get another printout? They're like, this is it. It's like probably like a scroll of leather. Like you can't replace it. But
it's
the party was fun. So let's keep going. After the banquet, the king and the courtiers escorted these two newlywed teens to their room so they could throw back the ancestral virginity sheets and do the nasty.
Do it.
Because this union was primarily about producing an heir to the throne, everything that happened in their bedroom was public information. Wasn't it a thing that back then someone would, like, sit outside the door and wait to hear if they fucked?
They, like, watched everything and then the next day, they would go in and check the sheets and look for, like, blood or a semen deposit to confirm that the deed had been done. So,
oh my God.
The next morning when they conducted the ritual examination of the marriage sheets and saw that they were clean and they knew that no one's virginity had been lost, they had a lot to say. It was,
well,
like,
basically
the talk
what had
of the
happened
town.
Was that both of them went in there and it was probably that little boy and they were like, that was a really long day. We should just get some sleep, right? Right. Yeah, it's really a lot.
And can
and
you imagine?
They both just lay there swallowing.
Like how relieved each of them was when the other one was like, I'm tired. I'm too tired.
Oh, yeah.
We've all been there. So these two would famously not do it for 7 years. Some people have suggested that it was because Louis had a disorder where his foreskin was too tight. Some have suggested that neither of them knew basic biology.
I hooked up with a guy who had this disorder, and when he would get an erection, he would bleed from his penis.
Oh, yeah, this is a thing.
He eventually got a corrective surgery. I skipped school once. I was a senior in high school, and he was in college, and I skipped school because he wanted to take black and white photo portraits of me. And when I asked how they came out, he said, I learned a lesson. Never photograph a woman from below.
Oh.
I know. Spicy.
Ooh. So we don't know why they couldn't do it. I'm not even old enough to have been there to confirm, but this becomes a major issue right up to the end of these people's lives because Versailles was like the gossip girl of history. It's like a bitchy place where everyone wants to get other people into trouble.
So before we proceed, we need to give some context about Versailles. Versailles was originally a family hunting lodge about 12 miles southwest of Paris.
It, like, looked like shit. If you look it up before the Sun King got his hands on it, the tacky one, the 14th, it looks like a pile of wooden shit. Nobody cares. It's like in the middle of nowhere and it's yucky. Like if you went on vacation there, you'd be like, that's all there is.
For reasons that we don't have time to go into, don't know, Louis the 14th.
I can't read
Louis the 14th. Roman numerals, I just can't. Until 10, I can do it. The tacky one decided to switch the royal palace from the Louvre, beautiful, to a revamped Versailles. Tacky.
So Louis the 14th used Versailles to institute his personal belief that the king was basically God on earth. And he devised a series of very complex and annoying ceremonies and codes, which made people feel very blessed if they were endowed with the responsibility of, like, bringing him his chamber pot. So the higher you were in court, the closer you got to be to the king and queen. All of these codes were very protected because they were basically the only thing that was holding this illusion of the monarchy together. But they also set the stage for major rivalries to develop in the pursuit of royal favor.
By the time Marie Antoinette got to Versailles, as many as 4,000 people lived there. That's a lot of people.
It's crazy. It was like a town, basically.
Yeah. And they basically watched every single thing she did from the moment she got up to the moment she went to bed. Like, she was fully in, to use a term that I learned in the class that we met in, Alyssa, she was in a panopticon. Did I use that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, everything that she did was surveilled, judged, and, like, weighed. Everything she did.
They woke her up and dressed her and helped her wash her hands and put on her makeup and handed her the soap while she took a bath. They probably put the soap on her. They looked at her in bed and ran to Louis the 15th every day to tell him that she and her husband were not fucking. And this person was just never alone. Like, she could just never take a breath alone. She was probably always running behind walls to try to do it. And then someone was like, hello. Oh, and also the public was allowed to come in and roam around and inspect her closets because the court believed in total transparency, and it was like a petting zoo, so people could just rub her clothes.
And this claustrophobia, I think, becomes a major impetus for what eventually comes, right? Like, of course, as a, like a teenage girl, she's going to look for freedom. Like, regular teenage girls look for secret freedom. Imagine being, like, touched, pawed at, watched, surveilled, every minute of your life. So despite the fact that she was so closely examined at all times, the etiquette people that were in charge of her were like, you're not doing a good enough job. They make her wear this dress that's like a princess-only dress that's called the Grand Corps. And it's so tight and uncomfortable that it's like a corset that gives people bad breath because it so mushes up their insides that they can't digest their food normally.
Do you know what my mom used to say when I was a kid? She used to go, you have tummy breath, which was if I like had like an upset stomach or something, she'd go, tummy breath, which is like these people had tummy breath.
They had tummy breath.
Oh,
so
God.
They want her to wear these grand habit dresses, which were these very heavy silk gowns that were 10 feet in circumference. And everyone always felt a lot of anxiety wearing them because people shit talked to you if you got stuck in a door or like knocked over a glass. So it's just like control, 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 control. And this bitch is like 14 years old.
God, she learns quickly that fashion is an expression of symbolic political power. And at Versailles, she had to look royal in exactly the prescribed way every single minute of her life. This would have been a great subject in the class we met in, Alyssa, fashion and identity formation. Also, Louis Auguste was kind of dumpy and boring and not regal. It was once said that he, quote unquote, gives the appearance of a peasant waddling behind his plow. So the pressure to dazzle on behalf of the monarchy was way turned the fuck up because she had to do it for both of them.
So Marie Antoinette is trying to rise to the occasion, but her mother, who's got like a spy in the court, is hearing about everything that Marie Antoinette is not doing well enough. And so...
And her mother literally has a spy in the court, right?
Yeah, her mother literally has a spy in the court. So she's hearing shit. It's not great. So she starts sending Marie Antoinette these kind of shitty notes all the time about how bad her penmanship is. She's like, you're not looking so hot anymore.
How does she even know?
because someone is like, hey, Marie Antoinette is getting chubby, or Marie Antoinette is dressing like a man, or Marie Antoinette is riding a horse like a man and it's very uncomely, or Marie Antoinette is not doing it with her husband. They're just telling her.
Because, she's not doing it with her husband. It's also very uncomely.
But it's because her life, it was so possible to watch her that closely that all of this information could be immediately transmitted to the big mama. So it's a big disaster for everyone that she can't get pregnant. Her mother is yelling at her when the Austrian court spy reports back that she is wearing riding breeches and riding a horse like a man, which will later fuel speculation that she has engaged in lesbian affairs. And she gets an earful that all of France is complaining that she isn't carrying herself with enough dignity. Can you imagine what kind of trouble we would be in if someone was rating our dignity on a scale of 1 to 10?
If every time I left my house dressed like a man, it implied that I was having a lesbian affair, I would be eating more pussy than anyone in America.
I mean, keep in mind, it's like the 18th century, but it becomes a rumor that will dog this bitch. It will dog her. It will become
And if she ever says, I'm not a lesbian, it just makes her more of a lesbian. It's that kind of issue.
Right.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
So the French are complaining that Marie Antoinette is too Austrian. The Austrians are saying Marie Antoinette is too French. Everyone is complaining about her. Things are not looking great. And she's probably feeling the pressure. Have you ever felt pressure?
I don't feel pressure anymore because I've disengaged from the Hollywood industrial complex. And now I just live my truth, bitch.
Brava.
But I used to feel pressure. And you know what the pressure caused me to do? It caused me to act out.
Act out. It makes you act out.
And also, this is the thing that I've realized in Jungian therapy, is that when everyone's watching you and you're asked to comport yourself in this very specific way, what I realized is that the only way I could ultimately even hear myself over the noise was to do bad behavior.
Right. And like this idea of compulsory conformity that actually like strips you of yourself.
100%. And you're like, I guess what I'm going to do is nosedive into being the most cartoonish version of myself I understand. And usually that version of yourself is your bad self.
Yeah. So I think that we can kind of start to understand why Marie Antoinette began looking for some things that she could control. So she starts sneaking out with friends to go to parties in Paris where people could admire her instead of asking what was happening with her pussy. What's happening with your pussy, Lena? So she's spending a lot of money on jewels and dresses. And it's kind of an interesting situation because although I think we understand the downturn of her life where people start criticizing her for spending too much during a time of like absolute famine in France. At the beginning, people really liked it. So the people of France thought of her as like a symbol of their grace and dignity and comportment. So in 1773, she goes on a trip to Paris dressed in white brocade and the imperial diamonds, All the poor people gather in the street and scream her name and cry like they are seeing the Backstreet Boys, and it's 1989, because she was so beautiful and regal and was representing France with glamour and elegance, and they liked that. So at this time, Marie Antoinette was the style muse, and the concept of the contemporary fashion magazine springs from publications that were meant to satisfy the public's appetite for information about her clothes and her hairstyle. So this kind of sartorial decadence that she's engaging in early on in her career as the Dauphine is not hated in the way that it comes to be hated. It doesn't represent the same things that it comes to represent when she gets taken down.
Yeah.
So although the people of France are kind of into her at this moment, the real shit is that Marie Antoinette was so disliked by so many in the court for being Austrian that people started to call her L'Autriche, which morphed into L'Autrichienne, which basically is a French mashup of Austrian and chien, or female dog. So basically her nickname was Austrian bitch, which sounds like
I'm not gonna name my child L'Autriche Dunham.
It's like a relatively contemporary idea to call someone an Austrian bitch to me, but it was like going on then.
Oh yeah.
So she's 17 by this point. Everyone is like, that Marie Antoinette doesn't take anything seriously. She was holding on to her hymen when she was supposed to be bearing heirs, and she couldn't get along with grandpa's favorite mistress, the Madame du Barry, which is interesting because the mistress role is a very significant one.
Yeah. Women like Madame du Barry not only functioned as a foil onto which public criticism could be deflected away from the queen, but they also held the ear of the king. By being aloof to her, Marie Antoinette potentially imperiled Austria's interests at the court. So later, Louis XVI's failure to take on a mistress would put additional pressure on Marie Antoinette because there was no other woman to complain about. No other woman to complain to. Marie Antoinette was everything, and she was not a good everything.
So everyone knew that her Louis, who looked like Glenn Close, didn't have what it took to be king. So they started to get really critical of Marie Antoinette because they were like, this Austrian bitch is going to be in charge. So people inside Versailles were paranoid that she was a Trojan horse secretly plotting on behalf of the tacky Austrian government, and that Louis Auguste wouldn't have the temerity to resist her schemes once they rose to power. So in May of 1774... old perv Louis XV dies of smallpox. So these two very unprepared people get down on their knees. This is a literal quote. They entreat God by saying, quote, guide and protect us. We are too young to reign. And God was like, I'm sorry. Did someone say something? Did someone
How
say
old
something?
Were they at this point?
They're like 17 years old.
Oh my God.
Sucks.
So fucking stressful. Because like now someone would be like, let's get these kids a babysitter. But then they were like, it's time to shine.
Sucks.
So even though people in France were on the verge of famine because of grain shortages and riots were impending, they were initially very excited about the new blood. And these new rulers stroked the peasants' nationalism, even though they had been taxed into absolute oblivion because neither the nobility nor the church paid any taxes. I find stuff like this boring. People were like, she is so pretty and elegant. What a goddess. She's probably going to be nice, etc. Now that's interesting.
But it becomes this historical precedent for the ways in which women that are installed within governments, their beauty becomes a reflection of how well people think they're going to serve the nation.
And white European beauty that fits a certain standard makes people feel secure and like they're like living behind this like wall of security.
Right.
And even as like their country is like fading into oblivion, they're like, right. Wow. It's like the way that people were like not that impressed with Eleanor Roosevelt, a genius, because they were like, what a funny looking chick.
Right. So remember that the Sun King, Louis XIV's idea was that extravagance was a political signifier. And this had been driven into Marie Antoinette's head. So once she becomes in charge and she's the queen, she starts upping her game. So she's throwing parties. She's having portraits done. She's wearing diamonds. She is getting dresses made and gambling and dancing until the sun comes up and then stumbling into church with a hangover.
And she probably felt like, I can't read. I'm not having any political success or sex or getting shit done for Austria. But if there is one thing I can do, it is throw a fucking party. And you know what? This is a real C-word subject, is women who feel like the hole in their lives can be filled by doing the most in terms of like throwing the party that's going to make the people right. go like, this girl really knows what a good time looks like. This girl really knows what luxury looks like. And let's just say that if we've learned anything, this way does not lie happiness.
No, because it can't last. Because after a while, the parties are like, you know, another party.
Well, the other thing is like parties are like drugs. Like, here's the sad thing about parties is like they have to end. And there's always going to be that moment where your last guest is going and you're like, do you really want to go? Do you want another drink? Should I put on another record? And it's sad to be the one cleaning up at the end of the party. And
the worst.
What's happy is to go to a party for 10 minutes and then leave and go to a diner.
Or take two Benadryl and watch a Lifetime movie and get up early so that you can record your podcast at 9 a.m.
That's what you recommended to me last week.
So 1775 rolls around. It's time for the coronation. Marie Antoinette puts on a puffy dress covered in ribbons and sapphire. She goes to see a society hairdresser named Leonard and takes a whirl with the poof, a hairstyle that caused some to complain that it literally blocked their view of the coronation and will eventually become synonymous with her personage.
Yeah.
It was basically like a roughly 3 foot tall headdress that was made from wire, cotton padding, and horsehair that then got wrapped with the wearer's natural hair, and the whole shit got powdered down and was then, as historian Caroline Weber says, festooned with accessories.
So some rumors say that Leonard was drunk the first time he tried
Leonard.
I'm saying Leonard. I can't do it. He was drunk the first time he tried the poof out on her head, but it didn't matter. She loved it. She felt so beautiful. But her mother would later see a painting of Marie Antoinette in her coronation outfit, and she basically responded, you don't look like a queen. You look like a slutty little actress.
Actress is like the most maligned profession in history.
Yeah.
So Marie Antoinette started using the poof and accessories as a way of, quote, playing politics in a form that was both kind of culturally acceptable for a woman, but also incredibly conspicuous. So she was wearing poofs that, like, she had one that had this gigantic artificial serpent wrapped around an olive tree to celebrate the time that she made her husband get a smallpox inoculation. She had one that had a ship in it to celebrate France's military participation in the American Revolution. She stuck ostrich feathers in them, which was probably kind of a joke about being the Austrian bitch, the Autriche. She had cabbages and radishes and tomatoes in her poofs. She had ribbons and diamonds and figurines of grazing animals in them. And her mom was probably like, that's really nice for you, but I don't see a damn baby in that hair.
A baby in that hair. And as all this was going on, 1775 was also the year of the flour wars, when riots broke out in France because a grain shortage and inflation had left people starving. One of the primary elements of the poof was its heavy powder. Powder that was made in large part from flour. Not a good look. Not a good look.
This is probably where let them eat cake kind of comes in. So people are like, she's wasting flour. She's got diamonds in her hair. And this sort of idea of let them eat cake took root.
So Louis
the 16th.
Louis the 19th didn't really have a great passion for anything other than hunting and lock making. God damn it.
Weird.
So as soon as this dude came into power, his aunts made sure to limit any possible Austrian political influence Marie Antoinette might try to exert. He was like, sure, you know better than me. I'm just here picking my locks.
So this guy was like famously incredibly indecisive. He wanted to do the right thing and listen to finance ministers who told him that he needed to address the country's debt immediately. But he was also really scared of pushback from nobility and the clergy, who you will all remember paid no taxes. And so he was constantly wavering, and people knew this. So Marie Antoinette was viewed as being in a position where she could manipulate him.
Meanwhile, Marie Antoinette was getting yelled at by her mom for not exerting more influence, but she was probably getting too tired to fight because she stayed out all night partying with her friend, her bad influence friend, the Duchess de Polignac, with whom she would share an unusually close bond.
Were these two having a lesbian affair like everyone believed? I don't know, but I do know that it reminds me of the time that my life was in the toilet and the only thing that made me feel better was taking pills and going to sway with this friend.
Been there.
You know who you are, who I literally never, I didn't want to be separated from. I didn't do it with her. It was just some kind of dependency issue. And you
did
want,
you guys sleep in bed together every night?
Absolutely. It was like a completely enmeshed, inappropriate kind
and
of.
And you guys would lie in bed together and like take pills and just like giggle and stare at the ceiling?
Yes. And it was mostly.
I have been there.
Yeah. It's like you feel like I was not fortified enough to face my life without her. So, you know, obviously we can't get in a time machine and go see if Marie Antoinette was doing it with de Polignac. It doesn't matter. I'm sure that there was some kind of emotional dependence going on.
It's almost like with those women, you form this kind of shared depression so that your depression feels less toxic, where it's like...
Yes, codependent depression. Absolutely.
Codependent depression, and it kind of starts to feel like this like sweet sleepiness you're sharing with another person instead of... the sickening doom you feel when you're alone.
Yes.
And so you're like, we don't have to go home. We never have to go home. We don't even have a home anymore. Our home is just wherever the two of us are.
Right.
But those relationships never end well because one person either starts to feel better or starts to feel worse and the other person can't go there with them. So it's just, it's never good.
Yeah, someone jumped ship.
Anyway, shit got more depressing when Louis's brother had a baby and all of the regular people who were allowed to hang out at Versailles and dig through her underwear drawers asked Marie, how will you give us an heir? She was depressed. She was humiliated. And she was like, I don't know. Are there any other parties tonight?
So she's like really devoted to the party circuit at this point because it takes her mind off her problems. And she had the stylist who would come and visit her twice a week by this point because she was expected to change three times a day and didn't like to wear shit twice. And it is rumored that at this point she's spending roughly $20,000 a day on clothes, which other people in the court were definitely doing too. It was just not as conspicuously as she was doing it. So this is a point at which like, you know, there's no factory-made clothing. Everything is done by hand. Everything is, like, incredibly expensive. Like, it's like 1% of 1% of people at this moment in history had access to new clothes. It's very, very rare to have access to new clothes. And she's not just, like, changing the lace on her collars and cuffs or, like, you know, that episode of Marge Simpson where she gets that Chanel dress and she just, like, makes it shorter or, like, puts sleeves on it. She's not doing that. She's not modifying already extant garments. She's just getting new ones. So it's like a really outrageous expense in the face of the sort of devastating economic situation that the country is in.
Yes. Yes. So in 1777, Marie Theresa sent in Marie Antoinette's brother, Emperor Joseph II, to get her to stop spending money on clothes and to knock it off with the gambling. Then he had a nice talk with Louis. As per Joseph's report to Austria, the king, quote, has strong satisfactory erections, introduces the member, stays there without moving for about 2 minutes, withdraws without ejaculation, and begs good night. If only I could have been there, I would have seen to it. The king of France would have been whipped, so he would have ejaculated out of sheer rage like a donkey.
Can you imagine? Like, this is in the historical record. This letter about this man's performance is in the historical record.
And what, can I just ask a question? Do you think that they were really having sex and that he was really putting his member in for 2 minutes without moving?
I mean, I don't know. I would imagine that they just weren't doing it at all.
And that he just like made it up like in 40-year-old virgin when he's like, yeah, boobs feel like bags of sand. Like he was just like, yeah, I put it in for 2 minutes. Do you think it was just like that he couldn't come? He had a thing about it. And so he could just put it in for 2 minutes without moving?
Well, actually, there's a lot of theories that people continue to have about this. It's like a very rich area of inquiry. So there has been this suggestion that there was something physically wrong. There has been a suggestion that there was just like a lack of interest. Nobody knows. We don't know. We weren't there.
God. Well, it was okay, because 16 months later, Versailles literally ran wine through their fountains for poor people, because Marie Antoinette had definitely lost her virginity. She gave birth to a baby, but it was a girl. Womp womp.
So at the baby's baptism, and remember the people had it in their heads that she was like doing it with someone else because they thought that her behavior had more closely resembled the behavior of a mistress than it had a wife. So there are already like these infidelity rumors swirling about her, which is classic. It's like a classic way to diss a woman, right? So at this baby's baptism, the Comte de Provence made this sort of shitty joke suggesting there might be an issue with the paperwork because there is a rumor that this baby's father was actually Comte d'Artois, who was Louis XVI's brother. So he was hotter, he was more fun, and he knew how to dress for a party, and people were basically like, LOL, it's probably not even Louis' baby, it's his brother's baby.
God, this is all so comp. This story really has it all.
It has everything. It has
everything.
That's
why you should tune in for our next episode.
That's when things get real greasy.
I know. Greasy is a good word for it. It's going to get greasy. It's also when we're going to talk about Petit Trianon, which is also the name of our fake lingerie company.
Don't give that away. Someone will steal it.
Well.
So in part two, we are going to talk about how Marie Antoinette has been framed within contemporary culture, specifically as it relates to the Sofia Coppola film. We're going to talk about Petit Trianon, which is for every woman on earth the most exciting part of the story because it's like fantasy land. We're going to talk about the national razor. We're going to talk about the national debt. We're going to talk about the bitter end. So tune in. It's going to be a hot one.
And until then, I'm Headless Horseman Lena Dunham.
And I'm Alyssa Bennett, historian of bad behavior.
And we will never call you crazy.
The C Word is a Luminary podcast. It's produced by Pineapple Street Studios and Good Thing Going Productions. Our producers are Dina Kleiner and Liz Watson. Sophie Bridges and Diane Hodson are our associate producers. Jenna Weiss-Berman and Max Linsky are our executive producers. Our theme song is by Liz Phair. Other music is by Matthew McLaughlin and Andrew Miller.
Les enfants de la patrie, le jour de gloire est arrivé. Contre nous de la tyrannie, l'étendard sanglant élevé. L'étendard sanglant élevé. Entendez-vous dans les campagnes mugir ces féroces soldats? Ils viennent dans... I forgot the rest of it. Hurrah, les citoyennes, formez vos bataillons, marchons, marchons. I forgot the rest of it.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.